Are you ready to take the next step in your leadership? Subscribe to the Life and Leadership newsletter today by texting the word VALUES to 66866 and join hundreds of other leaders as they lean into what it means to be a Christian leader. Hey, everybody, welcome back to the Follow to Lead podcast, a Christian leaders podcast powered by Greg Fay Insurance. Go to gregfayinsurance.com today and talk to my man Greg. Tell him that Tony sent you. Friends, today on the podcast, Chris Jorgensen. Chris helps nonprofits realize their potential and maximize mission impact. I love Chris's heart. He's got a brand new book out called The Nehemiah Blueprint. It's going to help lead you into what it means to lead your nonprofit. Or maybe you sit on the board of a nonprofit. This is good stuff. You're absolutely going to love it. Such a fun conversation with my new friend, Chris Jorgensen. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. Author, strategist, coach extraordinaire, Chris Jorgensen. Chris, thank you so much for being here today.
Absolutely, Tony. Thanks for having me. Really excited.
Me too. One of the questions that I love to start, you've done so many things in your life. We'll get into some of your backstory a little bit. But one of the questions that I love to start with is from a macro perspective, and that is, how would you describe the calling that God has placed on your work?
Going deep to start.
I like to come out swinging, as they say.
Yeah. Yeah, Tony, I think my calling, I think, is really to help people lean more into what God has for them. Whether that's organizations being more effective so that they can carry out God's will for them more effectively, or whether that's, my sons trying to be, you know, little young men that follow Jesus, right? And trying to help them see kind of what he has for them is greater than what this world has for them. Or if it's leaders, who are struggling, maybe tired, overwhelmed, it's helping them see that God's there and that there's a better way for them to kind of be released from the rigor of today and to focus more on kind of what they've been called to do as Christ following leaders. So that's how I would describe it. It's not as dialed in as maybe I would like it to be, but that's what I would say. Great question.
Thanks. Certainly, so much of our calling is played out of events from our own life. You've got a pretty incredible story that led you to this place where now you own your own business and you're an entrepreneur as well as an author. How did you end up forming Convergent?
Yeah, Tony, great question. So my background is faith-based nonprofit organizations. I am a accountant, kind of recovering accountant, if you will, started my career on the accounting side of faith-based nonprofits, and then had the blessing to serve at One Child, which is a tremendous international child development organization in Colorado Springs, alongside one of my great mentors and friends to this day. His name's Mark, and Mark was 5 to 7 years from retirement, and he came to me one day and basically said, Chris, I want to end well. I want my last 5 to 7 years here to be transformational for this organization. And so I saw him sort of humble himself. He had been there for almost 10 years, and he hired an executive leadership coach like yourself to come in, which really kind of showed the importance of humility and how Mark sort of approached that process with just such openness and such willingness to listen and hear. And then we did a strategic planning exercise, 3 days intensive. It was probably some of the most intense, time I experienced to that point, but it was a tremendous pivot point for the organization. Revenue changed, culture changed, employee engagement transformed, our ability to relate to our people overseas, completely transformed. And I was really the one that was lucky enough to champion the implementation of that strategic plan and saw firsthand what can happen when you unleash the power of employee engagement and strategic focus in an organization. And so that really, that was in 2016. And from there, I got a master's degree in strategic planning and then really started thinking through how can I, with my unique giftings and skills and abilities that God's blessed me with, help other nonprofit organizations do the same thing and experience that same sort of catalytic effect that when you have employee engagement and humble leadership coming together with strategic focus, what can happen. And so that's really what birthed Convergent Strategy, which is my organization where I try to help faith-based nonprofit organizations really maximize their mission impact and realize those same things that we were able to experience.
I think that there's a lot of leaders who are listening who are, by all accounts, wildly successful, right? They're not hurting, right? Mm-hmm. That things are going pretty well. They may not be maximized, but they're not. They don't do a strategic plan with outside help. And I often get the impression that they're wondering, why do I need an outside voice in my life to tell me how to run my organization? Because, you know, if they're anything like me, they can be mm-hmm. a little stubborn and a little bullish,
yep.
which is true for me for sure. How do you respond to the leader who says, nah, I got this without any help?
Yeah, Tony, that's a really good question. And in reality, they can successfully lead strategic planning. I think it's a matter of it's the leader when you're the leader in an organization or any leader in an organization, you need to wear that hat. Right? You need to wear your executive leadership hat in that strategic planning room because only you can bring that voice. Mm. And you shouldn't have to worry about the strategic planning process or getting all the voices heard or making sure that we're covering all the bases that we need to cover. You're there to bring your voice, and that person that's outside is responsible for everything else. So it's not a lack of capability or lack of ability or lack of desire. It's that nobody else can bring that voice, and we need that voice fully in the room, and we don't need it conflicted with trying to lead the strategic planning process well. And so that's how I would respond to that. I think, I would not want to lead strategic planning in an organization I worked for. At least the creation of the plan part.
Yeah, because you did the implementation part, right? You didn't. It was a long term relationship in the sense of like that person was there to help, but ultimately the day to day operations fell on your shoulders.
Right. Yeah. So we had our external consultant. He's a pastor at a local church, and did a tremendous job. Right. Like there was some team health things happening. And he was able to cut right to the chase. There were no sacred cows for him. He was kind of unencumbered by the knowledge that we had and was able to ask those questions that helped surface some of those things that just needed to get on the table. And then, so from there, once we created the plan, then when it becomes that transfer of ownership is really important, right? When you go from, here's the plan, we created the plan. Now, how do we own this and make it our own and implement it so that it becomes ingrained in the day-to-day work of the organization? That's when it needs to shift from outside to inside, I would say.
Now, throughout your work, both as a COO and now as this strategy expert, you get to see a lot of organizations shift, as you said, pivot. I was always curious about what are the things that you learn about leading change? Because, you know, from all accounts, change is just one of those monster words in organizations, and especially when you've, you know, family run organizations that, it comes with like real feelings attached to them. It's not just some, mm-hmm. you know, business is always personal, and when it's personal, it's always got some business in it, right? Like, mm-hmm. how would you suggest leaning into leading change for the leaders out there who are listening?
Yeah, I think there's so much in change leadership that matters. A few of the highlights for me would be over-communicate. If we think we've communicated enough, we probably haven't. And so how do we, and we communicate for a few reasons. One, so people can understand what to expect. So they can know how it's going to impact them, right? People are fearful of change because they're scared of how it's going to impact them negatively. But if we can communicate in a way that helps them understand the change is going to positively impact them, then you're alleviating kind of that need for a sense of security. So I think communication is key, not just at the start or on the back end to train, but kind of throughout, right? Communicating the why and communicating how it's going to impact people and why it's important for us to maximize our mission impact to make this change, those types of things. I think the other unexpected learning for me in change leadership is there's this concept that we call resistance to change, right? There's these people out there that in our organizations that might appear to question or challenge things related to change. But I think sometimes what would it look like if we took those people, because if they're passionate enough to voice their opinion about a change, what would it look like if we made them and helped them become champions for the change? And we didn't view it as resistance, but we viewed it as passion. And we turned that resistance into positive momentum for the change. And we got those people who appear to resist change because they're likely some of the most passionate people that care about the organization the most. And how can we get them on board quicker and help them become champions of change and stop viewing questions or people that appear to challenge change as not resistance, but as trying to help the change? And so those would be some of the things that come to mind beyond sort of the basic things like training, making sure that what you're changing is important to change, all those types of things. So
as I've gotten to know you a little bit, one of the things I appreciate is your love for your family. I love to steal really good family ideas, parenting ideas. And so I'm curious, how do you use strategic planning in your family unit, or do you?
Yeah, that's a good question. I would say it's a little loose from what are our goals? I don't know if we have goals as a family, but it's probably more on that value side, right? Like, so how do we every day behave in a way that people, that we're going to treat people like we would want to be treated, and maybe even more importantly, like they would want to be treated? How do we put others before ourselves? And so, you know, any strategic plan starts from the mission, the vision, and the values of an organization. And so, and those things are foundational. And so if those things are right, really the organization is going to be on track if they're in focus as well. So how do, as a family, my wife, Cynthia, and I try to instill those types of values daily, and not just for our boys, but for ourselves, right? How do we have patience with other people? How do we kind of step out of ourself and focus on others more? Those types of conversations happen often, which really kind of comes back to the core values of our family.
Yeah, one of the things that I really believe is that true mastery comes from teaching, not just knowing, right? And so in that process of teaching your mm-hmm. boys, I can imagine that it really goes a long way to help cement some of that. You know, there's nothing more conviction than correcting your kids on an area of your life that you struggle with as well.
Right. It's like the more you do it, the more you realize you have no idea what you're doing. Amen. Or how far you have to go, right?
You've made some pretty bold moves, including starting this business and the writing of the book. And how did you discern God's voice when he's telling you to move, right? And how does that process continue for you? Because I'm sure you get inundated with client requests and opportunities, and we always have to, as they say, pray through the right yeses and the right nos. How do you know when it's God and not just the burrito you ate the night before?
Tony, that's a really good question. I think maybe this is a roundabout answer. So I, early in my career, I struggled with the concept of contentment, because I felt like it was synonymous with complacency. And so I sort of viewed this idea of contentment as complacency or laziness, or we're not going to get better because we're content. And I think in terms of growth for myself, is contentment does not equal complacency.
Yeah.
And it's when you can combine contentment with a growth posture that really puts people in a good spot to be able to hear from God. So if you're content and you have this desire to grow and learn and to be where God wants you, and you hold things loosely and open-handedly, you're kind of ready, but you're also peace-filled. So you're not impatient, or you're not trying to rush things. And so I think that mindset shift was transformational for me. When I realized that contentment and a desire to grow and learn and be sanctified and try to be more and more Christ-like every day, even though I have so much further to go, really just helped, took some of the pressure off, right? And some of that feeling of inadequacy. And so I think that's number one. Number two, I think, to answer your question, is I try to always, one, pray, and then two, get my trusted counselors around me to speak into kind of what I'm sensing, what I'm feeling. Rarely have I made a significant decision in my life without talking to, obviously my wife, Cynthia, but then also three or four really trusted mentors that have been around me, for so long, where they're not, you know, they're kind of separated from my day to day, and they can really give wisdom. And several times they've helped me realize that I need more time to discern or need to look at things differently. And so I think that's, all of that I think is important. And my main prayer in those moments is, God, your will be done, not mine. This is yours, God. This isn't mine.
Yeah.
And I think when you have that posture of open-handedness, then it's almost like whatever decisions you make, you know that God's going to have you. So,
Just to drill down a little bit, you talked about that kind of transformational moment in your own journey. Was it a situation that you put yourself in that led to that transformation when you kind of realized that thing for you? Because I think a lot of leaders are searching for those kind of moments in their life. And I'm curious how you got yours.
Yeah, I think, Tony, so when I was new in my career professionally, I was impatient. I was an achiever. I need to get a promotion as soon as I can. And I think the realization that, you know, I think if I could tell my younger self a few things, it'd be to slow down, enjoy the life stages that you're at. Don't be in a hurry. You have a 40-year career ahead of you. Don't rush. And I think it was, is that kind of experience and realization and some success that led to pretty early high levels of responsibility, combined with some wise people around me that helped me put that two and two together. So I wouldn't say it was like an aha moment, but it was several sort of learning experiences along the way that sort of helped shape that, which is impacting me today, because it is like, this, whatever happens with Convergent Strategy is God's, it's not mine. And the only thing I can do is show up today and do my best and work really hard, for the people that I have that I'm blessed to serve. And he's going to do it with it, what he's going to do with it. So,
hey guys, just pausing this conversation with Chris to remind you to check out our sponsors, Team Barga over at Trent Barga Real Estate. For the home that you desire, the home that you need, the home that you want, it's never a bad time to start talking with someone about homes and what that looks like. So whether you're looking for your investment home, a dream home, or your next home, contact Trent today. He's such a good guy. He will work hard for you. Speaking of working hard, have you checked out my 5-star home services yet? They have such an array of services that you're going to need this spring to get your home ready for the summer. Whether that's HVAC, electric, or plumbing, their profit on purpose mentality is more than just serving others. It's about serving the community. Go to My 5-Star Home Services today. Contact their sales team. Tell them Tony sent you. They're going to give you all the help you need to make sure that your home is in tip-top shape. Now, let's finish up this conversation with Chris. That's awesome. I love that answer, that open-handedness of it all. One of the things that I appreciate about this latest writing is your heart in it is laced throughout. Like I can see, as I've gotten to know you a little bit, I can kind of see your art. And it really starts with the dedication page. And I love to read dedication pages. And so it's not something that a lot of people do, but as a podcaster, I get a lot of books and you can see a lot about a person from the dedication page. And I'm just going to take a second and read yours because I think it's a really good indicator. It says, "This book is dedicated to the glory of God. I wrote this book for leaders who have the right intentions, but who may be stuck, tired, or weary from the grind of leading through difficult seasons, or leaders who simply desire to grow on their leadership journey. No matter which one applies to you, my prayer is that Nehemiah's leadership example encourages you and transforms your impact." I love that dedication page. It's so well written. So let me ask you this. When you write a book like this that's so heavily based off the text, because you really do walk right alongside Nehemiah's journey throughout the book, do you does the book start and then you find Nehemiah, or does you read Nehemiah and then the book is born?
Yeah, so Tony, I actually never thought I'd write a book. And so the book, I was doing a Bible study, just morning quiet time, on the book of Nehemiah in early 2022. It was January, February, March of 2022. And in that season, it was still COVID. A lot of organizations were facing tremendous change and challenges. It was, you know, COVID shutdowns and then reopenings and then adjustments and then, you know, the great resignation and inflation and workforce challenges that were really just putting a lot of stress and pressure on leaders. And it was tangible and it was real. And I think that we're probably still working at a pace that we didn't work at pre the pandemic. And so as I was going through that Bible study, kind of with where my mind is with leadership and strategic planning, and that's kind of my passion, it just sort of hit me one morning, wow, Nehemiah's leadership example could be tremendously impactful for leaders today. And so that's what started the thought process of what did Nehemiah do? How did he lead? What attributes did he show? What behaviors did he do daily that helped him succeed to really lead the nation of Israel to do something that they weren't able to do for several hundred years? And so that in this case, right, it came organically, and it came from just this sincere place and desire to try to help leaders and encourage leaders who were feeling that pressure, who were overwhelmed, who may still be, right? And how can they then try to get back on track? And I think a lot of that was a personal journey for me too, because I was one of those leaders. I was one of those leaders that was impacted by the pressure of that season and the uncertainty and the ambiguity. And, you know, one day is completely different than the next. And, you know, there's seemingly unsolvable challenges ahead. And so it sort of was also something for me to just learn about how, you know, ancient wisdom from Nehemiah could impact my leadership ability as well. And it turns out, you know, nothing is new under the sun. And a lot of the things that he did, you know, are kind of foundational to a lot of leadership development and things like that today. So the book is really, it's really that, and that's where it came from. But, yeah.
One of the things I appreciate about the book is that you do a really good job of taking us through different stages of the leadership journey, right? And that's kind of how you broke down the chapters. So you start with kind of an intro with heat and pressure, then you go to passion and calling, and then courage, wisdom and discernment, preparation, and humility, vision, action, perseverance, and then intentional leadership. I I'd like to just take a couple of those chapters and just get some of your thoughts on them. I think they're all good, but we're not going to obviously have time to hit all of them. So, you know, when you think about vision, and because vision's one of those words that's like, man, every great leader has vision, right? Mm-hmm. And you kind of start off by talking about the tension between too much or not enough. What are some of your thoughts about vision mm-hmm. when it comes to leadership?
Yeah, so vision, vision is something. It's interesting because when you think of leadership, you think vision, you think big ideas, you think this, you know, 50,000 foot view. We're going to climb that mountain. That's where we're going. And I think if we look at Nehemiah's leadership, his vision matched the intensity and the reality that the people were facing. His vision was not too big for what they could achieve. And it wasn't too little. It wasn't too unambitious. It was the right amount of vision for the context of the situation. And I think that's really the key takeaway is all leaders need vision, but how do we make that vision connect with the reality facing our organizations? And that sometimes takes a ton of humility from leaders to say, you know what, I know that's where we want to go, but right now we're only going to talk about going here because that's where we're at today. Or sometimes it's we do need to go there, but it's all about connecting that vision to the reality of the organization. And then Nehemiah's example of how he set his vision, or like when he was ready to communicate that vision, it wasn't just like on a whim. It was based on everything that came ahead. But when he did it, it was only two verses. And it was really quite simple. But he finishes with why they could succeed. So a lot of times the leaders will talk about this is where we're going and why it's important. But Nehemiah didn't leave out or neglect why they could achieve it. And largely that was because God was with them. And they had each other, and they had God alongside them, and he pointed back to previous success. So I think not neglecting the why that it's possible to achieve it is also an important thing. So the right amount of vision for the context, and having that humility to kind of take the time to understand what that is, and then really communicating what I call the second why, which is why it's possible. Because people need to be encouraged and motivated, and knowing that it's achievable is one of those elements.
You work with leaders frequently. You help them develop these strategic plans. I would imagine that you've come across your fair share of like amped up, super charismatic, vision-driven leaders who are ready to go find world peace. How, as you, when you come into an organization, you find a leader like that, could very well be me at any given moment. How do you turn the temperature down of that leader without turning off their passion?
Yeah. It's not necessarily toning down. It's how do we get the information we need to know how much of that vision the organization's ready for. Right. And so, strategic planning should be done with an assessment-based approach from the start, right? So we need to understand where we are as an organization before we can understand where we're going to go. We need to know where we've been before we can know where we're going to go. We need to know what the people we exist to serve are facing before we can determine where we need to go. And helping visionary leaders that are very excited and passionate about their cause, when they can see kind of some of that unfiltered truth about the reality that where their organization is, understand where the people in their organization are, typically are able to come right alongside that once they're able to see that information. So it's really that kind of that time of learning about who we are, where we are, and what we're able to absorb right now is what sort of helps kind of bridge the gap between maybe where the vision is and what the organization's ready for. And then I think it's also Sometimes we have to, the dreamers just are able to dream, and we need to surround them with people that can operate and implement, right? So it's how do we have people that complement each other in the room as well, to really make sure that all strengths are leveraged to the highest place possible.
In chapter 8 of the book, you talk about action, and you're in Nehemiah 3:3-4, where they begin to take action and actually repair the wall. If you're familiar with Nehemiah's story, if you're not, you should pick up a copy of the book and read Nehemiah along with it. One of the things that you talk about in here is selfless action, right? And the key to selfless action. I'm wondering if you can kind of give us a deeper dive into what selfless action looks like.
Yeah. So, everything that kind of Nehemiah did, before chapter 3 was building the foundation for success, towards the effort to rebuild the wall. And so his passion and calling, his courage, his humility, his ability to seek God constantly, daily, for wisdom and discernment. His ability to rest and renew and prepare well and see barriers that could stand in their way, the vision he cast, all of those things were sort of the foundation from which the action that took place in Nehemiah chapter 3 and 4 were kind of sitting upon, right? And so in his example, the ability for this group of people who didn't really they were living in turmoil, but they came together and they selflessly did their own part, right? And Nehemiah, and I believe it's Nehemiah's foundation of leadership. It wasn't crumbling, it was intact. He stewarded it well. He ensured that it was constantly being kept up. And that effort and intentionality really compelled everybody to, except for a few noble people, to participate in rebuilding the wall, which I call selfless action. And I just imagine the power that could happen if everybody in our organizations were able to come alongside change efforts or a strategic plan with that same type of posture. But I firmly believe it's the foundational leadership elements that made that possible, that compelled the people to contribute to the effort. And so that's what I would describe selfless action as, is this willingness of people to say, it's not about me, it's about us. It's not about my wants, needs, and desires. It's about our goals as an organization. There's something, ours matters more than mine type of thing, in that posture. And I believe that starts with our leadership. And it's one of those things that, it's a catalytic lever, right? If we do that well, other people will want to give their best as well. So that's I hope so that good. Answers that, Tony.
Yeah, that's so good. So good. Okay. So one of the things that I love to get people's thoughts on is what does success look like for you? So let's say that 1 year from now, you're back on the podcast, which would be great. Love to have you back on. And we're popping some root beer for all the celebrations of what God has done in your life and through the Nehemiah blueprint over the next year. What are we toasting to?
Yeah, I think impact on people, right? So the organizations that I try to help, they all have a mission, and that mission is to do something, usually kingdom minded for people in need, right? And so success for me means that those organizations are more effective towards what they're trying to accomplish, and it's not really a how many organizations number. It's a it's a depth and breadth of impact of those organizations. Are those organizations able to be more impactful? And are their leaders able to break free of kind of that that pressure and the pace of work? Are they able to step back and really be the leaders that God desires them to be? Which is really the point of the book, is how can leaders do that well? And if I can point to a few examples of people that were tangibly impacted in that way, I think that's success, right? And if I'm able to do that, and if I can say, you know what, I honored God with what I did, and I sought him daily, then I think that's, there's some root beers for that, I would say. So
love it. Okay, I have one more question to ask you, but before I do, I know that the podcast family is going to want to connect with you all over the interwebs. Where is the best place to learn all things, Chris?
Yeah, so convergentstrategy.com is my website. It has everything you need to know about strategic planning and organization assessment services that I provide. If you go there, you'll also be able to take the Nehemiah Blueprint leadership assessment. It's a complimentary free leadership assessment that complements the book. It takes 5 to 7 minutes, and it gives you sort of the ability to tailor your own leadership journey as you walk through the book. And then you can also find out more about me and then connect with me right there with some calendar links. Other than that, Facebook and LinkedIn are the social platforms I'm a part of, so follow me there. And I would love to begin a conversation.
Okay, the last question I love to ask people, it's an advice question. I invite you to go back in time and give yourself one piece of advice, except I get to name the season of life that you're in. And so I want to take you back to the day before you sit in that 3-day super intense strategic planning session. Right. The day before that's all going to happen and your life is going to be radically shifted in the way that you think about strategic planning. If you could sit down with that younger version of yourself, hold his hands and look him in the eye, what's the one piece of advice you're going to tell him about the journey he's about to go on?
I'm not. Wow. The words that are coming to mind are buckle up. Right? Like get ready. You have no idea how God is going to change your perspective in what you care about and what you're passionate about, because there's a whole new, this whole other thing that you're going to, you know, in just 8 years be tremendously engaged and involved in, and passionate about going forward. So I think it's kind of this get ready, lean into him, and just be open to where you're sensing him taking things, and not close doors, but open them. Be kind of willing to try something that pushes you out of your comfort zone, I would say.
That's so good. Chris, thank you so much for your generosity of time, your heart for leaders, for the work that you put out into the Nehemiah Blueprint. I think it's a fantastic resource. It's got so many tools in it. I can tell that you really poured your heart into it. And so on behalf of readers and listeners, thank you.
Thank you, Tony. It's been awesome being here.
What a fun conversation with Chris. I just love the way he kind of leans into this idea about what it means to serve the greater good and to put out kind of this process. It's such an important thing. And if you're a leader, I recommend picking up the Nehemiah Blueprint. You can get it anywhere books are sold. The link's in the show notes. I'm so thankful for Chris. Follow him on LinkedIn. Tell him that you heard him here on the podcast. If there's anything that stuck out with you, anytime you share that, that makes such a huge difference. Well, friends, that's it for me today. So thankful for each and every one of you. Without you, this would not be possible. So thank you, thank you, thank you. Don't forget to check out our sponsors. And remember, if you're ready to take the next step in leadership, text the word values to 66866. That's it for me. Remember, if you want to follow Jesus, you must be willing to move.